So this morning, I'm delighted to welcome Dr. Amanda Fuller, who's come to talk to me about something I know she's incredibly passionate about, which is the sustainability, if I can say the word.
Yes.
And Amanda, what's your association with the school?
So my elder child, Emma, has just started in year seven.
Okay, so you're a stakeholder, to use modern terminology.
Yes, yes, I'm a parent.
Exactly. That's very old-fashioned, but probably more meaningful. Well, thank you very much for agreeing to do this, because what I'm particularly fascinated about you, Amanda, is why you feel the way you do, because I don't think I've spoken to any parent who's as passionate and vociferous about this cause. So what's made you feel this way?
I think it's the very fact that I'm a parent. I think all parents will relate to the desire to do the best thing for their children. I've got two children who are 10 and 12, and I passionately want them to have the best future they possibly can. And that means not only giving them you know, an education, but I've got to make sure that there's a planet still here for them to live on. And so I've got to do my bit to ensure that the people around us change their behaviour so that we've got a future.
Okay. So that very much, I think, is the sort of leitmotif at the moment, isn't it? I think there's a general sense that we have to do things differently.
Yes.
And that we can do things differently.
Yes. And I very much believe that. And my personal standpoint is that I want to tell everybody else to behave differently, to change the way they do things. But I feel that I'm only entitled to tell other people what to do if I'm trying to do the right thing myself. So I've spent the last 10 years scrutinizing my own life in a lot of detail and sort of come to the place that I'm at now.
And what's interesting, I think some of that thinking, I presume, has been shaped by your, if you like, your own education and your own degree.
Yes. So I have an engineering degree. I was lucky enough to study here at Cambridge, and I've got a PhD in heat transfer and thermodynamics. I think what was really valuable about my education is it allowed me, it gave me the tools to break down large complex problems into smaller chunks that are more understandable. And I think part of the learning from the PhD was the ability to communicate and to explain complicated ideas to people who maybe don't have the same educational background as I do.
And I think communication is the key in this, actually, too. I've just taken an assembly with the sixth form this morning, who were very sleepy on Monday morning.
Yes.
But it was very clear to me that we had to have a common language to talk about the issues, because otherwise we're talking at cross purposes and not really moving the discussion on. But what I'm fascinated about you, Amanda, is you really are walking the walk, aren't you?
Yes.
Because you're sort of semi-quasi homeless, or at least you're not living in your home at the moment. Would you like to explain why you've chosen to do that?
So 2 months ago, we embarked on a large renovation project at our house, having spent, I'd say, the best part of 3 years contemplating what we wanted to do. And we are doing an extreme makeover, renovation, refurbishment, whatever you want to call it, on our house. We knew we wanted to change the way our house worked in terms of the way we use the space, because the children are going from being primary school children to teenagers. And while we made that change in the day-to-day functionality of the house, we wanted to take the opportunity to do what I call a 2030 readiness appraisal on the house. And that involves drastically improving the thermal efficiency of the house. So we've lifted the floors. We're going to be insulating under the floors. We are doing major insulation in the loft. There was some there already, but it wasn't good enough for my liking. We are putting external wall insulation on the walls, and everywhere downstairs is getting triple glazed windows. All the new windows are going to be triple glazed, and we're replacing some of the existing ones.
So will this make the house carbon zero?
That really depends how you account it. So by my calculations, we are going to improve the thermal performance of our house by 60%. So that means we'll need 60% less energy for the space heating within the house. The other thing we're doing is we're switching from a gas boiler to an air source heat pump. Now, an air source heat pump uses electricity, but the way it works is for every one unit of electricity you put into a heat pump, you get approximately 3 units of heating out.
Right.
So it's more efficient. So it's more efficient. At the moment, it's touch and go whether a gas boiler or an air source heat pump has a lower carbon footprint. If you're on oil, if you're on oil, get an air source heat pump. It's an absolute no-brainer. You save money and you dramatically reduce your carbon footprint. For gas, it's more of a fine line. However, I looked at our existing boiler and it was our gas boiler. It was pretty much at the end of its usable life. So there was no way I wanted to install a new gas boiler. So we're installing an air source heat pump. In addition to that, we already have a solar PV array on the roof. So those are the solar panels that generate electricity. So it's a very compatible renewable technology.
What's really interesting about what you've said, though, is that you're not ripping out a new gas boiler. You're actually, because I think there's a danger that a lot of waste happens because people get a bit sustainability mad, if you like, and think it has to be done now.
Yes.
So it's really the planning of it, isn't it?
Yes, it is the planning of it. And what I've learned in looking into air source heat pumps is that the national grid is decarbonising fairly rapidly. So a year ago, if you were to look at the comparison between the carbon footprint for an air source heat pump or a fairly efficient gas boiler, a gas boiler would have come out as your lower carbon footprint option. I think now they're about equal, and I'm hoping in a year's time it will definitely be in favour of the air source heat pump. So if you have a gas boiler, I'd say it's definitely worth looking at how...
What's the remaining lifespan
for it before you switch over. If you have an oil boiler, get an air source heat pump. that's my take-home message.
I was going to say, that's the message for today. So what you're doing then is you're modelling behaviour for your family.
Yes.
What impact has this had on your children, apart from the fact they're having to live in a different house?
Yes. So at the moment, they're living in a much smaller house that's not set up the way we would ideally like it, but they are very environmentally aware. My daughter took part in one of the climate strikes last November,
but the school would not have authorised.
No, which was completely unauthorised by the school. But even though I am a passionate believer in sustainability, and I passionately believe that everyone needs to put their money where their mouth is and make their homes more thermally efficient, I have never really initiated those kind of conversations with my children. I'm waiting for them to wake up to it, because I actually believe that children have a right to a carefree lifestyle. And
they don't need the worry.
They don't need the worry. And it's us adults that need to be doing things. I mean, I think any family that can afford, say, a large SUV or can afford private school fees or can afford foreign holidays has the financial capability to make meaningful changes to their lifestyle. So whether that's changing how you travel to work, how you travel to school, whether that's improving the insulation in your house, whether that's installing a solar PV array, I think everyone has the financial capability to do that, and it is a choice.
But it's a mindset as well, isn't it? What you're talking about is people need to change their paradigm in which they live.
Yes, they do. They do. And everybody keeps saying, oh, the government need to do something. Well, I don't have a lot of faith that they're going to. And I think those people who are financially able to need to make those choices and need to start putting their money where their mouth is.
Which is fair enough, because you're obviously doing it in your setting.
Yes, and it's costing us a lot of money. And it's not money that we are going to save on any of our kind of utility bills.
But it's doing the right thing.
And
when do you hope to move in?
We hope to move in on May the 29th. I'm very fixated on this date. I have complete faith in my builder. He's a good guy.
It will happen. And I understand you've got some issues around a couple of windows still. I mean, I love these little details, these little quirks in building projects.
Yes. So for most of our windows, we've now ordered most of the windows. And we've chosen an Austrian company called Internorm that does triple glaze, fantastic U-value windows. However, we did let ourselves get a little bit carried away with a little bit of architectural bling for two windows where they're not rectangular. We've got one triangle and one trapezium.
Oh, look lovely.
Yeah, they will look lovely. But these are the little things that might cause glitches in our programme of works.
But I think what's lovely, though, is that aesthetics still matter. It isn't just a functionality of having a sustainable house. It's about having a house that you love to live in and has a beauty as well. Which you can afford to do it, it's nice.
So we are aiming for a house that will both be warm and cosy and eco and green.
And a home.
But also it's a home. We're going to have lovely views out over the garden. We're going to have wonderful spaces that we can be together in as a family.
Excellent.
So it's combining the two. And that's why we've undertaken this big project.
Well, I'm in awe of you to have made this decision to do this and to change your lifestyle. But I suppose it's a small sacrifice if you feel then you're moving into a home that is the home ideally everybody should be aspiring to.
Yes.
I appreciate that it could be beyond the financial means of a number of people, but I take your point. It's very much, it's what each person can afford to do for themselves to help them live a sustainable life.
Yes.
It's got to be proportionate, hasn't it?
Yes. And I think a lot of the choices about leading a sustainable life actually lead to saving money. I mean, if you don't fly for your holidays, then you can save a lot of money that way and you're reducing your carbon footprint. Mm. If you lower your meat consumption, you lower your carbon footprint quite significantly and you save money. Mm. If you cycle everywhere, it's a lot cheaper than driving. There's a lot of things which you can do which will actually save you money if you don't buy as much stuff. Mm. I mean, stop buying new clothes. You save loads of money and you can spend it on wall insulation instead.
Wow.
Yes. I don't think I'm going to use that as my headline message.
But Amanda, thank you so much for coming in and discussing the life cycle of your house, actually.
Thank you.
I look forward to seeing photos of it at some point.
Yep.
But more than anything, I think you're just a living example of somebody who is living sustainably and really encourages us all to think, what differences can we make in our own lives to be doing something a bit better for the planet? So thank you very much for coming in this morning.
Thank you.